What is going on? Welcome everyone to the live deep dive. We love doing this with y'all. We will look forward to interacting with all of you excellent folks in the comments. I don't know about how you feel, Ian, but I feel like our deep dive audience is the best on the internet. They low ball, they love to talk ball, and they love to get into all the intricacies of college football just like we do, Ian.
Sure.
Awesome. Well, hey, if you like this conversation that we're having live, you need to join the conversation that's on Inside Texas. It's the best place. And right now, $1 will get you a membership until August 30th. That's Ohio State kickoff. Ian, I don't know if you know this, but we're playing Ohio State this year at Ohio State in the Shoe. Join Inside Texas today. Join the best commentary. Join the best conversation in all of college fandom. We've done a good job of picking fights recently with the Georgia and Oklahoma and A&M fan bases, and that's very entertaining at the moment. But beyond all that nonsense, there's a lot of great recruiting info and analysis from folks like me and Ian. And then, you guys, your lives will be incomplete if you don't pick up the 2024 Longhorn Football Prospectus, Thinking Texas Football. It's the 13th annual. This is the premier Texas Longhorn and SEC football preview. It previews every Texas opponent. It talks about every single position group, every single player, every single thing you could possibly want about Texas football. 61,000 words of Longhorn burnt orange goodness. There's a reason they call this the Burnt Orange Bible. Get one today. Go down in the description. The links for it are there. But, of course, it's on Amazon. It's on Smashwords. It's on Apple. Just search with my last name or search Thinking Texas Football. It'll pop up. Buy it, and you'll be very pleased. All right, Ian.
That's one of the only – there's only two preseason publications I really do anymore.
What's that?
Thinking Texas Football.
Okay.
Which I'm not – I'm like a third of the way through maybe. I've enjoyed it. And Dave Campbell. But really just for the high school section.
Yeah, and there's a powerful nostalgia to Dave Campbell that when I was a kid in Austin – him showing it showing up at the HEB stand was like a big deal. Like you just had to snatch it up and instantly read it. And of course I'd read my local football team, you know, my football team that I was on to see our prognostication, usually not great, Ian. And then I'd of course look at Texas and I'd read all the other enrichment articles. I agree with you. I still have an attachment nostalgically to Dave Campbell's Texas football.
I sent my son into HEB last year to buy it. It was his first. I had like the baby with me in the car, and so I was like, I'm gonna give you money, you're gonna go in and choose one item from the candy shop. You put that and you find this magazine, like show the picture, make sure it's this magazine, whatever candy bar you want, you will probably bring back change. That was his first solo transaction.
Blake Cooper has some nice things to say. Hey, thanks, Blake. Blake says, just finished it, Paul. With all the game knowledge, I'm now looking down on all the poor normal fans. It's great at the top. Yep, I agree, Blake. That's the whole purpose of reading my preview. It's to be superior to others. That's really the whole point of it. EOD Horn asks, wait, were you on the playoff team that got beat by Belton? I was not on that playoff team. I did not see the playoffs in my high school career. Thank you for bringing up painful memories. All right. You guys want to talk about some interesting things with respect to odds for the national title. So BetHG just released their lines. Even if you're not a bettor, this is a useful sort of tool for thinking about the dynamics of what's going on for the national championship race. And of course, the playoff race. You can't win the national championship if you don't make the playoff, Ian. And that's going to be an important part of this discussion as well. You'll see Texas is the odds-on favorite is how you keep hearing talking heads describe it.
What does that mean, odds-on?
First of all, yeah. Texas is 6-1. So to give you guys an example of comparable odds in a given year, Alabama in 2022, they were -130. Right before the season to win the national championship. Meaning, if you bet the Alabama Crimson Tide to win the national championship, you bet 10 American dollars, you would have won about $7.67 if they'd won. If you bet Texas right now, at 6-1, $10, your payout's going to be $70. It's a little bit of a different world. So when you get a talking head the first time Texas loses or Texas plays someone tight, maybe they shouldn't, you're going to hear, well, the overwhelming favorite to be the national champion, Texas, really struggled today. Just understand that that person's an idiot and doesn't understand what these odds mean.
Yeah, I believe you noted in the article that right now Texas is a dog on the road against both Georgia and Ohio State.
That's correct. Typically not the vibe of a preseason national champion. Now, that's immaterial to the games actually being played. We're just trying to give you guys an illustration of how really disparate this market is. There's 8 different teams with 10-1 or better odds to win the national championship. That's very unusual. So in most years, and maybe if you disagree, please pipe up, Ian, or chat disagree. In most years, I think there's 2 to at most 5 teams that could realistically win the national title.
This year, playoff.
Sorry?
Especially now there's an extended playoff.
Now that there's an extended playoff. People are like, well, that's going to help the underdog. Now anyone can win it. It's like, no, it's quite the opposite. It actually guarantees that talent was more likely to win out over time, right? But I think this year there's 8 to 10 legitimate contenders. And I think some of the dark horses have a real shot.
Can you name for me, or can you get to 8 teams that you think have a chance?
Sure.
Just like pick 1, 2, 3. Go ahead.
Interestingly enough, and this will further antagonize all the Georgia fans that we're antagonizing, and Sark has been antagonizing the last week. Oh, I think Georgia is the worst risk-adjusted bet on this board in terms of the top teams. I think Texas has a shot. I think Ohio State has a shot. I think Penn State has a shot. I think Clemson definitely has a shot. I think Alabama has a shot. I think Notre Dame has a shot. I think there's a drop-off now, but I do think Oregon, LSU, and yes, believe it or not, Florida has a shot. And that's kind of where I sit.
I disagree on a couple of those, but I agree with your main point. If I wanted to short Penn State this season, if I were like, look, James Franklin is never going to break through.
You don't believe in big game James?
I don't believe in big game James.
All right.
It feels like he always finds the wrong answer in big moments.
Well, you know some information I heard that was rather damning about him?
I'd love to hear it.
Well, me, like a lot of people, I got very excited when he hired Andy Kotelnicki at offensive coordinator. Former Kansas guy, a guy Ian and I have a ton of respect for from like an X's and O's standpoint, teaching standpoint. Then in the offseason, he goes and gets Jim Knowles. It's like, who's got better coordinators than James Franklin? Well, I found out that James Franklin has veto power and play selection power on any short yardage and any goal line play over Kotelnicki.
I mean,
was there anything more predictable than that?
Every head coach should, honestly.
A head coach should be able to pop on and go, hey, let's not run a quarterback sneak from the 4-yard line. It's not going to work.
The thing is that relishes that. He relishes that.
Yes.
He does it all, you know that he does it all the time. I have this I took a screenshot of him going for it on 4th-and-1 from their own like 29 against SMU, where they had all the momentum in the game.
Yep.
All the momentum. And then they're like gonna go for it in this like very risky situation where it's like, why? Why are you doing that? You're giving SMU a chance to get back in this game. And then I took a screenshot where it's like all his staffers around him are like this. And then he's got like a play sheet and he's like, and then on the bottom, it just says 4th-and-1. And of course they lose it. SMU gets the ball right freaking there on the goal line. And then SMU turns it over. And the route is on.
All right. So to answer your question, how would you short Penn State?
Yeah.
You would do that in season on a game to game basis in some key games. Yeah, you wouldn't. There's no really way to short them. Now, you could say Penn State to not make the playoff, and you'll get a plus payout on that. Penn State's making the playoff, buddy.
Yeah, I don't want to bet against that. I just want to bet against them blowing it the first time they. That seems risky.
Hey, Blake Cooper coming in with the $9.99 manly super chat saying, in all seriousness, I appreciate all y'all do. My favorite show and duo. Hey, Blake, right back at you, man. You are a big part of why the conversation on this network is so great. So thank you so much for the super chat and thanks for the kind commentary. We really enjoy interacting with you guys. Anything else on this that you want to touch on, or should we go to down to a couple of the finer points that I'm trying to make?
What? Connor's going to be mad. Why do you think Georgia is the worst bet? Is it because their odds are high and you don't think that they're one of the top five teams?
So they're considered the second favorite, almost co-equal to Texas, right? Plus 650, we're plus 600. I think they have some major question marks. So one of the values of this here magazine is I do a deep dive. There's Taff. I do a deep dive on all of our opponents, and I pay extra attention to the opponents that I think matter the most. And Georgia, they have some really tough losses. And you could certainly say the same about Texas. However, our replacements are guys like Arch Manning. Their replacements are guys like Gunnar Stockton. And I just don't think Gunnar Stockton is a guy who's going to elevate them. I think they're going to look a lot more like Jake Fromm era Georgia stylistically than 2022, Stetson Bennett, Carson Beck, passing game, explosives down the field, Georgia.
You know, what I think their biggest problem is not so much that Stockton doesn't elevate them, but that he's throwing to like Noah Thomas and Zechariah Branch and not Ladd McConkey or Adonai Mitchell.
True. And also, they really lost a key component of last year's team, which was their ability to dial up the pass rush when they needed to. They lost two edges to the NFL draft, and then they lost Damon Wilson. He transferred to Missouri. They had to go and get a guy from Army who is actually a really promising, interesting project, Elo Madozi. But the fact that Georgia had to go do that in the edge room, like, to me, edges and linebackers are synonymous with Georgia football. And they had to go find someone. They also lost Chambliss, who was kind of a really nice role player for them. So I think they're just going to be a very different Georgia team than what we're accustomed to. I have them losing two games in SEC play.
That sounds about right. I'm hesitant on the pass rush thing because I just feel like maybe a couple weeks into fall or a couple weeks into the season, it's going to be like
freaks will just emerge. Yeah, that is certainly a potential. It's hard to forecast to that because, so for example, last year, Ian, I was hearing all about this Dylan Stewart guy at South Carolina.
Yeah.
And there's like, this is a true freshman. Yeah, he's skinny, but this guy's an absolute freak. Oh my God, no one can block him. And I'm like, well, it's the South Carolina offensive line, to be fair. And then you see him in like the first game and you go, oh, oh my gosh. So there is that potential at Georgia, but I would say I dove pretty deep into their spring game, like their post-spring analysis. And
there's nobody getting that kind of buzz.
Georgia moderators are having trouble identifying that guy right now.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to another point, Mr. Connor.
What are you with me on USC or are you out?
I think USC is potentially good. I was kind of assigned to choose a dark horse, and you could see the big drop off from LSU to Florida, right? They clearly have tiers to these programs. After the drop off, I like Florida the most. I would say I probably like USC the second most. What I like about USC is Danton Lynn. He's going to be a very stabilizing force to that defense another year in. They also fired Benny Wiley, the strength and conditioning coordinator.
Yep.
Which was very important because they needed to get strong. And Wiley's one of these guys of like, he's real into like mirror muscles. Just like all the things that help you as a football player are not apparent in the front part of the mirror. It's all behind you.
You know, we talked about gladiators and how they ate tons and tons of beans.
Yeah.
Because then the protein for muscle, right? I don't know if they were even that sophisticated, but they might have been. Protein for muscle, but then also put some flab on your body to protect you.
Just mass.
Just mass. Wiley would have been the guy sending out the Adonis Gladiator.
Yeah.
Who gets cut to pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's very important. I like Florida because of the dark horses. People tend to focus on the dark horse. They'll look at like Lenore Sellers. He's freaking unbelievable, right?
Dylan Stewart.
In the playoff format, you have to be able to trade body blows at the line of scrimmage three or four consecutive blue chip opponents. Florida is the only team from this list that checks out on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Michigan Auburn? Checks out. No. Auburn would be close, but the stuff with Freeze and all that is just so scary. Like as you know, I think Auburn's going to break out this year a little bit, but yeah. I still find Hugh Freeze so scary and just that whole program. Napier is a little scary too in terms of in-game management. He's not exactly Julius Caesar out there, but man, they're good on the line of scrimmage. I don't think Texas fans appreciate that because we blew them out so badly in Austin. That was a throwaway game. Florida chose not to participate. They just looked at their schedule and said, hey, we need to focus on next week. Texas is going to beat us anyway.
Do you know who Anthony Hill said the two most physical teams they played last year were?
Florida and
this is
Georgia?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, I believe it. Mr. Hill is correct. But why do you like USC?
That I found out that their two big receivers that they have coming back from last year are freaking awesome.
Lemon and Lane.
Yep. Jaden Maiava is a little more of a dual threat than Miller Moss. He's one of the worst passers that Lincoln Riley has ever had.
Yeah, he might be the worst.
But I think Riley will be able to use the dual threat aspect in the run game. And then those two dominant receivers to just line up kill shots for him to hit. Their defense improved considerably last year in year one with Danson Lynn. They did it without a very good D-line. They didn't have like a single guy on the D-line that you were like really that worried about. And then they went and they got one of the nose tackles from Kentucky that everybody was covering. They got a 350-pound dude from Georgia.
Yep.
They brought back a guy they've been developing that they think is going to be really good. They got, I think, another edge in the portal maybe. And then they have this a couple of freaks that they've recruited that are now like freshmen and sophomores at edge. And then they have like Anthony Lucas from A&M who's solid.
Yeah. So they get another Aggie player who's achieving somewhere else but College Station.
Yeah. If they level up on D-line like they're trying to, with all the other returning pieces and the like workable scheme now where they're not just trying to outsmart you every play, and then you get the normal Riley magic, I just think that's very, very potent.
66-1, my man. Not bad. I'll tell you the trap play on here, Tennessee.
Oh, there's no way.
Yeah. That's true.
Yesterday.
So what people will do, what casual bettors will do, Ian, is they'll scan this and they'll go, A&M 8-4 every year. Miami, nah, they'll choke. Auburn, are they even good? OU, nah. And then they'll go, Tennessee? What? Tennessee made the playoff. What do you mean? That's a name brand. Heupel has these guys winning. They upset Georgia. And I don't think they've done the dive that – stuff like my preview is done, which will explain to you why Tennessee is going to take a step back. So
I like Tech at 100-1 is another interesting.
Hell no.
I bet Cody Campbell owns that ticket.
He owns that ticket. He owns lots of lottery tickets on that roster, Ian.
Yeah, that's right. Scratch offs on that roster. That's unfair. Actually, I think all their additions are kind of sure things. I just don't think they have quite enough.
So quick thing on just betting and sort of seeing things before the market moves and the value of that. If you can go down a little bit, esteemed producer, I bring up Clemson, and that's a team you and I have been talking about for a while. when you could bet on their futures, and this happened way back in January, I immediately bet Clemson every way you can bet Clemson. I bet them to win the national championship. I bet them to win the ACC. I bet them to go over 9.5 wins. I bet them to go over their conference win total. Every single bet you can make, I made on Clemson. And I made it right after Texas had manhandled them. And people are like, ha ha, LOL, Clemson, Dabo's cooked. That game told me everything I needed to know about Clemson, which is their offense has the components to level up, and their defense had the talent, but not the coaching. And Dabo, as famously loyal as that guy is, he was going to fire that DC because that DC was committing malpractice. And so while everyone was saying, LOL, Dabo's cooked, I'm buying Clemson stuff. Immediately after, Dabo fires the DC, hits the portal, by the way, goes and gets like good players in the portal, not just like, you know, Clemson guys, gutty guys, and basically changes everything. And so I was getting tickets for Clemson at 22-1. Right now it's 8.5-1, Ian.
Yeah.
It took 6 months for everyone to catch up and realize what I predicted, what I thought was going to happen. But that is the value of having a grasp of like the reality and not just the dialogue of college football of Dabo's done. It's over. You know, like, I'm just like, guys, it's like, you have to like watch the players on the field.
I've been on Dabo's done for a couple of years now, but I said Dabo's done because they don't have NFL wide receivers anymore. And that was always their secret sauce. And then I watched them in preparation for the Texas game.
And you're like, and oh,
who are these freshmen? They have NFL wide receivers again. So I flipped immediately.
Yep. Yeah, that's a pretty good measuring stick. ASU to make the playoffs might be good. I haven't seen the numbers. Yeah, the fear with ASU for folks is it's the Big 12, which is any Big 12 team in the upper echelon, and there's like 9 of them, can beat any other Big 12 team on any given Saturday. So you're going to end up with very messy standings at the end of the year. And the team that you think is dominant early is going to get upset at Utah late, is going to lose to Baylor late, you know, and that's the fear that bettors have with the Big 12 is it's so, I mean, just this, there's so many teams that are very comparable that it's very difficult to make a definitive, hey, that's the team that I'm going to ride. Obviously I like Kenny Dillingham and I love Sam Levitt. So I will not oppose that bet. Baylor Auburn in game in week one should be very, very interesting. Man, Blake, you couldn't be more right. That is going to be the most interesting game to my, in my opinion. Not the best game or the best talent, but it's going to be real interesting because those are two teams that are very capable. And there's a lot riding on it for Auburn. I'll just say that. You know, Baylor can lose this game and still have a good year. Auburn is fragile. So they need to win this thing.
Arizona State was 5-2 in one score games last year.
Yes.
That's always
to look at.
That's the mark. And one of those was the Texas game. That's the mark of usually the Big 12 champion in a given year when we covered it was, well, it was Oklahoma actually, but the Big 12 championship game was Oklahoma versus the next tier team who had the best single score game win loss record. I don't, that wasn't all of it, but you, that was generally how I went.
All right. Well, I just wanted to touch upon that article, talk a little bit about risk adjusted basis and the ability to anticipate both as a prognosticator and as a bettor. And if you're not a bettor, it doesn't matter. The idea is that betting forms a rubric, a sort of structure to think about sports and college football. That's actually very helpful, whether or not you're a bettor or not. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Here's something that you need to do if you want to have a structured home loan. Whether you're refining or you're buying a house, you need to contact this guy right here, Gabe Winslow, 832-557-1095. You can reach him anytime, any day of the week. This guy is always by his phone and he's always working. And that's why he kicks so much butt. This is the premier mortgage guy in the great state of Texas. And if you're the best in Texas, you're the best in the world. That's how I think of it, baby. Give Gabe a call, 832-557-1095. Over 20 years in the industry. Of course, he's a Longhorn grad and a passionate fan like we are. He's also got a law degree, and he's a former National Merit Scholar. Very, very sharp guy. And this is a guy, if you're into numbers and if you're into looking for the edge, this is the guy who's always got an edge on the market. Give him a call and find out why. All right, Ian. You. What's up, Splenda Daddy? He tells us, yo, fellas, and offers a nice super chat. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that.
Do you think Splenda Daddy mixes Splenda with scotch like Michael Scott? Tastes like Splenda, gets you drunk like scotch.
He might be a stevia daddy. You never know.
That's one of my favorite Michael Scott things, is that he puts Splenda in his scotches.
I just like any interaction he has with Toby, because when I was in the corporate world, that's how I felt about HR. Ian, we've got a question from the great David Keith Williams. Give it a read.
He asks, what aspect of the 2025 team do you think is the weakest area? And what do you think that area of the team has to do in order to be an asset? I have my personal answer to those two questions. So, David, get your answers in a minute after we tell you what we think. So the weakest area, coverage, is one of my biggest concerns. And general O-line, but I'm not exactly, maybe pass protection on the offensive line. There's a world in which Texas is like, you know what, to win the toughest games, we need just let Arch fling it around the house. And they have good receivers for that.
Yep.
Injuries and Mosley, I think, in addition to the guys already on campus. But if they need to win games in five-man protection, I don't know if the line is up for that. So those are the two biggest question marks I have. What do you think the team has to do in order at this point? I mean, get better in fall camp? I don't know.
Give it a go. David's got another question, Ian.
Did you have any thoughts on that one before we move on?
I agree. I think the offensive line needs to come together. They've got some unproven guys that really need to show up. We lost 150 combined line starts. We lost 100 combined line starts from just our center and our left tackle, Jake Majors and Kelvin Banks. That's, you're going to feel that as a college football team. I don't care how loaded you are and how well you develop. In terms of coverage, I think that's cornerback.
Yeah.
And this is a relative discussion. So understand that 90% of the teams in college football would trade their corners for Texas's.
Yes.
So we're having a relative discussion here. This isn't 2017. Like when Ian and I had concerns in 2017, we were worried that we sucked. Like, yeah, that was, not that we, this was a relative weakness. So I want to see Manny Muhammad dial it up, and I want to see Kobe Black, frankly, win the other starting corner job. And if he doesn't, then I want to see a Jalen Gilboa that we've not seen yet. Jalen Gilboa's been about the same steady guy he's been every year since he was a freshman for 3 years. So he needs to take a big leap up, or I need to see Kobe Black assert himself at corner. Running back, I want to see it on the field. We have a lot of questions, but I do feel like we've got a pretty good floor there.
Yes.
Ian, tackle the next question, if you don't mind.
Well, I would just say I totally agree. I think Kobe Black winning that job is probably the way that resolves best. They need coverage at nickel too. Like, I think McDonald's going to move around. Also, offensive line, I have a suspicion that at some point they make Robertson the center and move Hudson to guard.
Yeah, possible.
I think that's like they come back to that floor setter after chasing the ceiling of Neto and whoever else in fall camp.
I would love to see Neto just blow everyone out of the water, like put it all
together. Neto, not NATO. Oh. We're not looking for World War III here, Paul.
Oh, okay. Well, don't worry. NATO's not up to the task. Yeah, I think Umeozulu, how about that? I think it's really important that guy assert himself at guard, and it's all right here. He's got the physical tools.
Okay. I will read David's next question, as you prompted me to. Texas has had All-American tight ends the past two seasons. JT Sanders was, I guess, third team is what he's saying in 2023, and Gunnar Helm was first in 2024. Do you think Jack Andrews will lead Texas in catches in 2025, and why or why not? I'd say no, because Moore or Wingo gets a lot of targets. But I do think Andrews will catch at least 40 balls and be prominently involved.
He will catch 50-plus balls, but he will not lead us in catches. Nor do I think he will be an All-American. Well, I mean, maybe you could find an obscure – there's always some All-American team that has somebody listed, right? But I think there's some other tight ends who will get more play. The guy to look for, Claire at Ohio State. He's going to have a very wide-open middle of the field to contend with. And that guy, I mean, he's going to have six catches for 80 yards and a touchdown any game he wants to.
I don't know, he might have that every week. And then the games he wants to, 10 and 180 or something.
Yep.
David notes, JT Sanders was third in catches in 23 and Helm was first in catches in 2024. 2023, I think, is more the norm. The intended top target in 2024 was, I already forgot his name, Isaiah Bond. And Isaiah Bond got in and out of the lineup. So that was one factor.
Yeah, just a bit for context, Helm had 60, Golden had 58. So, and obviously Golden led us in yardage.
They, for whatever reason, actually kind of wish I'd asked Sark this if I'd had a chance. Golden was like, the NFL watched him and they're like, this guy is a golden god, a wide receiver.
Yeah.
And Texas did not treat him that way until like the playoffs, which is bizarre and we don't really know why.
Splendid Daddy bringing it with another $5 super chat. Thank you, buddy. Gonna bet on injuries to score the first touchdowns for Texas this weekend. Am I nuts?
Oh, that's Daddy just pounding Jack and Splenda on the airplane right now.
That's right. That's not a bad bet. What do you think? I might take Arch Manning on a quarterback keeper, but we'll see. I do think Andrews is going to kill it in the red zone.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not a bad bet. I don't know if it's the cleverest. I might go like Manning or Wingo.
You know, for what it's worth, not that you care, this is a fun bet, probably, Splenda. Any of these touchdown props are usually very poor in terms of return on odds. Yeah. Also, Texas is going to have a pretty disseminated offense, meaning Trey Wisner is not a guy. We're going to love him. He's not a guy who's going to score 17 touchdowns. And we don't know exactly who our goal line back is going to be just yet. Could it be Baxter? Could it be Gibson? Could it be Clark? And then we know Arch Manning's going to carry the ball near the goal line. And then we know we're going to play action near the goal line, right? So, we're going to have disseminated touchdowns. We're not going to have the Ricky Williams season where one dude scores 30 touchdowns, right? Or Vince Young, always a pretty good touchdown bet near the goal line. So that's going to be a tough prediction. Hey, if you hit it, we hope you do.
I think I like Manning because of the odds of a scramble catching Ohio State before they've really quite got the clamps on.
All right. You went to SEC Media Days, Ian.
I did.
I want to get your general impressions before I ask you about a notable absence from SEC Media Days and what that might mean for one of our friends across the state. So tell us about SEC Media Days. Give us some bullet points of anything you thought was worth knowing that maybe that the average person wouldn't know.
Well, I should start by saying that there is zero truth to the rumor that Feinbaum carried Arch Manning in on a rickshaw. That did not happen. Stop spreading that around. Although he does love him some Arch, apparently. I have two conspiracy theories. You want to hear these? conspiracy theory is that Sark, well, it's the same theory, but it's in two parts. One, that he orchestrated the timing of the commitments so that the day he shared the main stage with Kirby Smart would be the day that it was announced that Texas had flipped to taken two players out of Georgia that were coveted by the Georgia Bulldogs on defense. And part two, he was a little distracted while he was setting up this whole conspiracy. And then he got there and he saw Taft's tie and was like, oh man, that's great. That's good job by you. And then he gets up and he begins his comments with like some kind of halting attempt to pay tribute to the flood victims. I'm not trying to dog Sark at all. I think he's like, I should absolutely do that. But when he was doing that, it seemed like he kind of didn't have a lot of flow in his speech. It took him a minute to kind of get rolling. And I think that that was an impromptu decision he made after seeing the example set by Taft. Not that that means that much. Thoughts?
I don't know. I didn't watch that.
You didn't watch it?
God. No. What other observations do you have about SEC Media Days? Was it a zoo around Arch?
Yes. Zoo around Arch. I actually, when he left, it's just like mobs of people around him. It was actually kind of like that for it. Anytime a Texas quarterback goes to a Media Days, it's actually kind of like that. But it was another level just a little bit with Arch. And he was like going out and everybody's around him. And I actually was next to Billy Lucci. And so I was like, is that what it was like with Manziel? And he said that with Manziel, it was still another tier, which sounds like an Aggie homer take, but he was like, Manziel was coming off the Heisman and was coming into Media Days 2 days after getting kicked out of the Manning Academy.
Yeah, he got kicked out. That's pretty funny.
The zoo level around him was just another level.
Yeah.
You got any other questions? I like to size guys up a lot of times and like try to stand near them and just sort of see like, are these guys really big? How do they measure to the listings? Arch is really that tall. He towers over everybody, which is funny because everybody's trying to follow him and he can't get away because he's towering over everyone.
Why was he dressed exactly the same way that I was dressed when I went to the Tridel Fall Casual?
I think the answer is pretty apparent.
He's a frat daddy.
He's a frat bro. Yeah.
I loved all the Twitter memes of like Sigma Chi would like to apologize for setting this pledge's anus on fire. We do not condone this. This does not represent good stuff.
Yep.
We got a big chat we need to talk about. Producer?
Do you remember when that Oklahoma State killed that steer and left it on another frat's doorstep?
Yeah.
And some of the moral outrage over that I thought was laying it on thick. Did you have moral outrage over that? Or are you like, it's just a dumb frat thing? I don't care about these cows.
I mean, I don't like sort of wantonly killing animals. And I think it was not an animal that belonged to them. So that's not cool. Like cows.
Not great. Yep.
Yeah. I'm like, so I was going to say, you wouldn't feel great if someone came and killed your dog, but Ian's like, well, actually.
I'd be perturbed.
Okay. Well, there you go.
That's about the extent of I wouldn't go grab a gun. I'll tell you that.
But yeah, if this was a beef steer that was destined for the slaughterhouse anyway, yeah, you know, right. I mean, honestly, it's from a property. Like that thing is worth a grand at least. So
that is not what the moral outrage on Twitter was though.
No, it wasn't. But these are all people who don't hunt and they don't even understand how the food in their the grocery store comes from. So it is what it is, man. All right. No other big thoughts on SEC Media Days?
Not really.
All right. Well, who was notably absent from SEC Media Days?
Well, so you were on this before I was because I wasn't there for this part. But Texas A&M neglected to bring starting quarterback and frequent flyer on a personal jet, Marcel Reed, which is very interesting. I mean, you are ready to make enormous mountains out of this molehill. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Marcel Reed, not representing Texas A&M. He is the starting quarterback. He's the third year quarterback, by the way. So people will try to do the technicality of, well, Elko won't send underclassmen. Well, that's technically on the football roster. He's an underclassman. He's a redshirt sophomore. At Texas A&M, he's a junior. I'm assuming he's not on DJ Campbell undeclared major path, but Marcel Reed was not there. And I think the dog that doesn't bark is sometimes the more interesting story than the little yappy chihuahua.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think that's very interesting. They also brought in Jacob Zeno in the offseason, a very capable group of five quarterback. Started off his career at Baylor. Started at UAB in 2023. Was really good. Got injured last year. Also played for a terrible coach in Trent Dilfer. He's transferred to A&M to be the backup. Very good short passing game quarterback. And a lot, I think he has the game up here. And your observations from the A&M spring game is you don't think Marcel Reed has the game up here quite yet. He's looking at his play sheet on his wrist quite a bit in the spring.
Every single, I couldn't believe that their broadcast kept showing it. Every single play, he was studying it like he was about to go do like a verbal test for citizenship.
Yeah.
He is not in command of that offense. They have this, they had this amazing play that they ran in the spring game. There was like Texas is Ezekiel's wheel play, like the overload RPO with all this motion. Yes. They ran it like five times. They never hit the right guy on it once. And then they ran a play off of it where they ran it, but then they faked it. The running back became a blocker and they ran it as quarterback follow. And I was like, that is dastardly. But when they ran it, Marcel Reed turned to hand off to the wrong place where there was no running back. And I thought the other quarterback had a chance to maybe win that job. Not even Zeno, the other young guy. So Elko, so Rex St. Charles notes, Elko didn't bring Wegman last year either. Maybe it's an Elko thing.
Do you think there's a reason that Wegman wasn't brought to a public speaking forum, guys? Have you ever seen Wegman during the magic trick segment? Have you ever seen that pot movie with James Franco and that whole crew, Half-Baked?
That's an old one, right? This is like Dave Chappelle and...
Oh, that was the other one. What was the other? Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, you don't bring Connor Wegman to a speaking forum. Like, nah, bruh. Nah, nah. On God, bruh. Nah. I don't think you bring that guy. But anyway, I thought it was notable that Marcel Reed was absent. People can make of that what they will. Look, if you're a returning starting quarterback, you need to be a team captain. You need to be a team leader. And people are like, well, different strokes for different folks. Quarterback is inherently a leadership position. There are very few other positions where you're grabbing guys on your team and going, line up there. No, go over there. Like that, it just, if you know the ball, if you know the game at a decent level, you better have some leadership qualities at quarterback. And if you don't send that guy, it tells me something. But you know who was there?
Wait. Can I just say? Sorry. Yes. I love ruining your segues. To me, the thing that you're pointing out, quarterbacks, the main thing about quarterback is decision-making.
Yes.
Which of my teammates get the ball and win?
Yeah.
Like the offensive coordinator tries to take as much control over that decision as he can, but it still comes down to the quarterback, which is also our concern about Marcel Reed in general. Which is he an uber athlete or is he a decision maker that can lead his team to wins? And them not bringing him is not, it's a, to us, that's maybe a bigger data point than other people would think.
Here's another data point.
Here we go.
There was someone there from another one of Texas's rivals, our greatest rival, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, who should not have been there. And the fact that he was there is very odd, Ian, and it only supports the larger theory that you and I have been cooking up over the last year, which I actually write about extensively in this right here. I have a whole section detailing all this. Why was Oklahoma's general manager Jim Nagy at SEC Media Days, Ian?
Why indeed? There's a great quote he had where he was like, we've got NFL talent all over this roster. I've got people calling me up, NFL guys calling me up to say, wow, you guys are loaded. Especially John Mateer, the quarterback, and Jaden Ott, the running back.
Yep.
Paul, tell me what's different about Mateer and Ott from the rest of the Oklahoma roster.
These are portaled in players that they had no role in developing.
And who specifically brought them, made the decision?
Nagy. He also brought the OC, in case y'all didn't know.
Yeah, I've heard that disputed, but I trust you on that one. They Jim Nagy is getting out there. He's selling his narrative for Oklahoma this year. And he wants, I think in his dream world, Oklahoma finds a way to screw it up on defense, even though that's really where all their talent is. His offense is the little engine that could. And then he's like, look, we got to move on from Venables. And then he like promotes Arbuckle to head coach and then goes and finds a defensive coordinator that'll just do what he's told. Like he's been trying to turn Brent Venables into. Or maybe he's okay with Venables as long as Venables is okay to just be a defensive coordinator.
Question for the chat. Ian, you can't respond. How many teams are in the SEC? Come on, chat. Google doesn't work that fast. You should know this. Uh-oh. Oh, the chat. No one can keep up realignment. The answer is 16. How many of those teams brought their general manager to SEC Media Days? One in 16 is 6.25%, Ian. Is that a majority or a minority of the SEC?
That is a small minority.
I would say it's a distinct minority. I just think this is so funny. The super chat, Blake Cooper, another generous super chat. Thanks, Blake. Says Nagy doesn't even believe in himself. Guys, what we're trying to do, if you're not an Inside Texas reader, you're missing out because this is so fun to unravel what's going on at OU. The hijinks, the fact that Jim Nagy doesn't report to Brent Venables, the fact that Brent Venables is not allowed to interact with the offense. This is some of the weirdest, silliest stuff that's ever happened at a program. And it's exactly sort of the nonsense that we endured for some time period here at Texas. So believe me, we're not just pointing the finger and laughing at a rival. Though we are, it's also we recognize ourselves in this from our nonsensical walk in the woods. And I just think if you're not a part of Inside Texas, if you're not reading my preview where I break all of this down, you're missing out on one of the great power struggles in college football and actually something that could form a significant part of college football if the OU experiment, quote unquote, works, right? With Jim Nagy ultimately taking control. You'll see a bunch of other teams assume this model of having the all power.
If he wins.
Yeah, it's like Shogun. Did you ever see that Shogun, the miniseries?
Yeah, on your recommendation.
So the great warlord is saying, you know, your battle is foolish against the Portuguese. You know, stop it now. And the pilot responds, it's foolish unless I win. And then the Japanese Shogun is like, very impressed with that answer. Like, yes, that is the correct answer. So we shall see.
Heard about goshawks or whatever. What's that line? Do you remember?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know you're talking about.
It's like a running thing in the show that was very insightful.
Well, his idea was that he was the great manipulator of all events, and all these people are just hawks on his wrist, and he's deploying them, and they're coming back for little treats and morsels, and he gets the kill, right? That's the imagery of Shogun. Great book if you've never read James Clavell's book, Shogun. The redone miniseries is excellent. The original was quite good. But
I worry about the sequel miniseries that does not have the source material to draw from.
Yes. That, like, look at True Detective, right?
Or Game of Thrones, to bring it back to Oklahoma.
Oh, God, help me. All right. Christian asked the very obvious question. Is it going to work, Ian?
I don't think so. I think it's – remember when Herman came in and all he did was talk about alignment, alignment, alignment?
Yep.
I think that that was very true. Manny Diaz actually told me about his time at Texas. He was like, forget about the schemes, forget about all this. At a place like Texas, just getting everyone on the same page.
Yes.
All oars are steering in the same direction. If you can just do that, everything else is probably going to take care of itself.
Yep.
And I would say that Oklahoma, the reason that they have been a blue blood regular powerhouse in college football, despite what looks like not the most advantageous position for recruiting or whatever else, is that they get a guy, they identify a good coach young and early, and then they just let him rule over all of Oklahoma's resources with an iron fist.
That's right.
And right now, they do not, they are the opposite of that. And so I think you're actually going to see more of the, you saw at Texas, where instead of getting a team punching above its weight, you actually get a total that's less than the sum of the parts.
I agree. I just, the idea of a GM going to an SEC media days, it's just one of the funniest things in the world. And I don't know what to say. Hey, one quick comment that we want to address from David Keith Williams about, he has a quick comment about centers, and then we'll wrap and we're out of here. David Keith Williams says, as good as some of the recent Texas centers have been, why do you think Texas seems focused on centers that are around 6'3", 300? The Texas center has been smart, but not physically imposing. I think
it's all the same guy. It's been the same guy for like 20 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, also 6'3", 300 is a pretty classic center physique. It's a question of how good you are at that frame. I think he had an accompanying question with that, which is, our running game would really open up if our center could single block a nose tackle. Well, yeah, that's the dream for every program. That's the dream for every team, high school, junior high, college, NFL. If your center can single block the nose tackle, that defense is in trouble at the snap of the ball. The idea, though, is that you have of nose tackles that are enough of a problem that the center can't do that. And then you've got to devote extra men, or he's going to be disruptive if you try to just single block him. That frame, 6'3", 300, you just described a classic center. So there's a few anomalies to that. I remember famously Rex Tucker. I don't know if you remember that guy for TCU. He was 6'6". But he could play center. He could get really low. There's other centers that are
always kind of like that. A lot of people didn't think he was that great. Chris Hall.
Oh, Chris Hall. He was not 6'6".
He was bigger, though. Or not bigger, but he was a little taller. Because he played tackle. He played a little tackle.
You're describing a very classic center frame. Jason Kelsey, undersized center. Excellent.
He's like 6'1", 280 or something.
Yeah. I mean, Mark Stepnoski, you're an old head who remembers the Dallas Cowboys. That massive offensive line had a 275-pound center. And he was awesome. He went to the Pro Bowl all the time.
What the what people do is they take the guy that's really tough, really smart, reliable, clean snaps, and they're like, this guy, we have a guy that can do that can't play any other position.
Yeah.
But he can do all these super reliable things. And that's why the center is so often a smaller guy, because people take their really good player who's limited by size, and they're like, if we put you at center, we can get over it because the pros will outweigh the cons. Alabama did have, I used to note this all the time, under Saban and that last year for Sark, Alabama did have enough guys where they routinely had like 6'5", 320-pound centers that could do all those wonderful things. And it was very imposing. but they're not, they haven't quite got there at Texas yet.
Got the mustache and the dunce cap. Hey, one thing to consider if you're SEC aficionados, buy this, because I do actually break down the best centers in the league. That's Auburn's Connor Liu. He's the third best. Parker Brailsford at Alabama is the second best. Jake Slaughter at Florida, best center in the country, phenomenal. And he is a guy who can single block a nose tackle. And you're going to see that Florida run game open wide open this year, folks. Trust me on that one. And if I'm wrong, come back in the chat, talk trash to me. That's what makes this fun. Hey, also, you need to get over to Inside Texas. That's the best possible conversation. $1 until August 30th. That's the kickoff for Ohio State, where Texas is going to go up there and beat the Buckeyes in their home stadium, get scoreboard, and come back home, and then play three patsies, Ian. Join Inside Texas today. Best conversation out there. And then, of course, buy the 2025 Longhorn Football Thinking Texas Football Prospectus. You'll find the links to it in the description, or just go to Amazon, go to Smashwords, go to Apple, enter the book title, enter my last name. It'll pop right up. Hey, y'all, this has been an awesome chat. Y'all have been great. For mustachioed Paul Wadlington and dunce cap Ian Boyd, hook 'em.